This is one of the most difficult chapters of the synthesis of yoga. So we shall deal with it first. You know, we are discussing the question of sin and hell. Not a very interesting subject, but it can be very important from many points of view. There were two remarks which were made here when we spoke last time on this subject. Hell and heaven are here, not elsewhere. The second remark was, there is no idea of hell except in those scriptures where people are motivated to work on the right lines under the threat of a hell. If you don't do work properly, you will go to hell. These are the two remarks which are made. And I must say that I appreciate both the remarks very much. It is true that both heaven and hell are here. It is true. But not merely here. Both hell and heaven are here. But not merely here. If you maintain that this world is the only world and there is nothing else in the world, then that statement requires to be enlarged. There is a series of worlds, not only this world, but there is a series of worlds. I am very happy that you have made so much of good research that you have found the exact place where Sri Aurobindo speaks of different planes. Sri Aurobindo speaks of the terrestrial, the supraterrestrial, and the supracosmic. These three worlds are very important. There is cosmic, which consists of two, terrestrial and supraterrestrial. If you take the entire cosmos, this entire cosmos can be divided into two distinct parts. The terrestrial, that means earthly existence. What we see around us is the terrestrial existence. This comes from the word terre, the earth. In French we have the word terre. So from there this word comes, terrestrial, that which belongs to earthly existence. But this terrestrial existence is not the only existence. There is also supraterrestrial, something that is above terrestrial. The entire cosmos is not merely the earth, but also that which transcends the earth. This terrestrial, you might say, is the physical existence. All that is physical. That would mean also the galaxies, not only this earth as we see it, but also the galaxies, because they are also physical. Everything that is physical is terrestrial. So apart from this entire physical universe that we see, there are many other worlds. In a certain sense, you might say that if you want to be perfect on the physical, you cannot be perfect without knowing the supraterrestrial. Many people say, why to bother about others? Let us confine ourselves to the problems that we face here on the earth. Now, if it was possible to resolve the problems of the earth by remaining confined to the earth, it would be quite all right. But the trouble is that you cannot resolve the problems of the physical without entering into the supraterrestrial. The reason is that from the supraterrestrial, a number of forces are constantly vibrating and migrating. Now, this supraterrestrial itself has many planes. There is at least the light plane, and there is the mind plane. And then there is a supramental plane. And between mind plane and supramental plane, there are many other planes. There is a plane of the higher mind. Then there is illumined mind. Then there is intuitive mind. And then there is overmind. So these planes occupy the intermediate space between mind plane and the supramental plane. The higher minds, illumined minds, intuitive minds, overmind, and then the supermind. Now, between this purely physical and the life plane also there is an intermediate plane. It is called subtle physical plane. And then when you go above the supraterrestrial, means if you go beyond all this, then you come to supracosmic. In the supracosmic, there are two aspects. One is called acosmic. And then there is transcendental. First finish writing, then I'll go forward. Acosmic. If you enter into acosmic, no cosmos exists in that consciousness. It is acosmic. It's a state of consciousness in which neither this world nor other worlds is seen to be real. There is a small Gujarati poem which says, when I awake, the world disappears. When I awake, the world disappears. It's exactly opposite of what we do in our ordinary waking consciousness. When we wake, the whole world appears. But if you awake in the acosmic consciousness, the world disappears. Jagine jom to jagat dise nahi. Don't worry about it. That is a Gujarati poem. When I awake, the world disappears. The transcendental includes acosmic. It includes all the planes, all the supraterrestrial planes, and the terrestrial plane. But it is above all of them. Such is the nature of the transcendental. So you might experience transcendental here and now, because everywhere transcendental is present. But normally it is very difficult to experience transcendental unless we attend to cosmic. It's a step towards transcendental. It is only when we become conscious of the entire universe at the same time that divine consciousness is understood or known. When we call God, what we call God is this transcendental. And because many people are not aware of all this whole scheme, the word God is defined differently by different people. When we ask the question, do you believe in the existence of God? The question is, what kind of God? There are many kinds of conceptions of God. So this is the concept that we get in Sri Aurobindo. The transcendental is God, if you like to call him God. Some people have allergy to the word God, so it doesn't matter. You can call it by transcendental consciousness, you can call divine consciousness. It is this God of which Sri Aurobindo speaks whenever he speaks of God. It is not God living in the seventh heaven, looking at the world and amusing himself with the world as it is moving on like a cinema show. That is not God. This divine consciousness is all, everywhere and above. He himself is all and he is above. In Sanskrit, this word transcendental is called Purushottama. I am using this word because in the passage that you have pointed out to me, the word Purusha occurs quite often. So I wanted to introduce to you this idea of Purushottama. Not only Purusha, but Purushottama. Purushottama consists of two words, Purusha and Uttama. The two words put together become Purushottama. It is said Purushottama has a double status, mobile and immobile. Mobile and immobile. It at once moves and does not move. This is the one supreme mystery of his consciousness. Even when he moves, he remains stable. Even when he is stable, he is not incapacitated to move. He is not incapable. He is stable, but not incapable of moving. In Sanskrit, these two words are called, mobile is called kshara. I am sorry to give such new words. It will make our understanding of the passages that you have pointed out more easy. The mobile is called kshara. And the immobile is called akshara. Now you have a complete picture of all that is. When we ask the question, what is it that exists? This is that exists. It takes into account everything that is here. In the world as it is understood by us, in other worlds, supraterrestrial worlds, in the immobile, and that which is above the immobile. All these planes that we see are parts of mobile. Because in all these worlds there is a movement. all the terrestrial and supra-terrestrial planes are all part of mobile. There is a continuous dynamism. Behind the dynamism, there is the acosmic, that which is immobile, but also transcendental. Acosmic does not remain by itself anytime. It doesn't exist alone. The acosmic exists because of the transcendental. And wherever there is transcendental, all that is there is present. Now we ourselves are cabined into this terrestrial. We are, as it were, put into a box. Originally, we are not in the box. Our origin, or whatever we are, is exactly here, in the transcendental. When you ask the question, what am I? And where am I? The answer is, I am a portion of the transcendental and I am in the transcendental. This is the true answer to our question, what am I and where am I? Even when we don't experience this, because we are imprisoned, we are only seeing this world as it is and only seeing only this portion. But if we can expand the consciousness, then we can live simultaneously in all these planes. Sri Aurobindo and the mother walked on this earth with this total consciousness, simultaneously aware of all this and working on all the planes. Just as our work is confined only to this little thing, once we begin to become more and more aware, we are admitted into all this because we already belong there. Only we become aware. You become aware that you are all this. Take for example, even now, we are cabin in this little space. Now, if I ask a question, in this space, where are your thoughts? What space here is occupied by your thoughts? You just ask this question. In this space, your body is certainly located in a place where no other body can sit. But where you are occupying that space, nobody else can occupy. But when you say to yourself, I wrote a long essay. Now, long means space, isn't it? Wherever you say long, now you can say I wrote a long essay means I had a long piece of paper on which I wrote. So only your words occupied that space, that long piece of paper. But what you wrote, the meaning of what you wrote, where is it occupying? Which space does it occupy? When you say, now my ideas have become very wide, what do we mean by wide ideas? Does it mean that you have become now 10 feet larger in space? No. Where does this largeness exist? There is a space which is not physical space. We are aware only of terrestrial space. But if you want to understand your own ideas, and if you know that your mind is narrow or larger, or wider, it is surely not this terrestrial space. It is mental space. There is a space of the mind. There is mind space. This is only physical space. But there is also mind space. Similarly, there is life space. When Alexander the Great conquered a large area of space of the world, and if you ask him the question, when you say, I have conquered all this space and I am very happy, what does it really mean? That space already existed any time. The space that we conquered already existed any time. But he says, I have conquered. What does it mean? Does it mean that he now lives in this whole space? Physically? Not at all. He occupies his large space in his life space. Not physical space. In his life feeling, in his vital desire which he wanted to conquer, he wanted domination over the vast space. And now he feels that he is now able to dominate. He can command something to be done which is obeyed everywhere in that space. Where is that space in which he commands actually? Because that space already always existed. Now this space which he commands is surely not this physical space. It is the vital space. All our desires, they live in the vital space. All our ambitions belong to the vital space. Just as all your thoughts belong to the mind space. And these spaces are much larger than the physical space. Even to imagine the physical space is such a huge thing. It is unimaginable for us. If you consider the galaxies and the wide spaces between one star and the other, if you consider how many millions of light years it takes for light from one star to come from there to here, millions of light years, such are the distances. That is the reason why Mother said as an exercise that if you want to be very, very wide, if you want to come out of your narrow prison, think of yourself in a small space, then think of your country, which is a very large space, think of all the continents of the world, and think of the sun and the star, which is not very distant star from us. And then many other stars, each one, even many of them bigger than the sun. And the systems, galaxies in which they are all located. Billions and billions of them. And consider how much space is involved as compared to that where you are and what space you are occupying. And you are troubled by little things in the world. And even you are troubled with little things, if you think of such a huge space, those little things will disappear. All your grumblings, grudges, this is not done to me, I am entitled to this, I am entitled to that, why people don't look at me? But there is so much space to look at. And this is only physical space. Life space is even vaster, and mind space is even vaster. And when you come to the higher mind, illumined mind, intuitive mind, over mind, and super mind, because the word super mind is very common among us, we do not consider what super mind really is. And what will be the vastness of super mind? And then if you come to transcendental, the supreme Purusha, the word Purusha has to be understood first. Purusha is a status of consciousness in which one feels oneself to be the originator. Any status of consciousness in which you find or you experience yourself to be originator, that status can be called Purusha. Now, whenever you can see yourself as originator, you will find yourself to be superior to what is originated. This is a speciality of the Purusha consciousness. Because of the status of consciousness in which one finds oneself to be originator, one feels oneself to be superior to that which is originated. When you produce a beautiful picture, you paint it, then with regard to your painting, when you see it, since you have originated it, the status in which you are now placed with regard to the picture is a Purusha consciousness. Purusha is always a status of consciousness. It can exist with regard to anything that is presented to you as that which is originated by you. Each individual can be said to be individual Purusha. Then there can be cosmic Purusha. All the terrestrial and supraterrestrial existences, if you stand behind and you see all this originating from you, then you can be a cosmic Purusha. You are the cosmic Purusha. And if the whole world is transcended and you stand above everything, then you have Purushottama, Uttama Purusha, the Supreme Purusha. Everything in the world is seen to be originating from you. Be thou as perfect as thy Father in heaven is perfect, means to be one with the Purushottama. And you don't need to fabricate it. It is not as if little by little you fabricate it. You are already there. It's only we are not conscious of it. We have cabined ourselves in a small status. Only a little thing we see and we feel that we are originators only of that little thing. But if you begin to expand yourself in consciousness, then already you are now Purushottama. It's not that you have to fabricate it. You don't have to become Purushottama. You are Purushottama. That is why the word that is used is, you realize. It's called a realization. You realize you are Purushottama. In the Upanishad, we have a very short sentence of knowledge. That art thou. That art thou. Thou art that. That is a transcendental. That art, A-R-T. Thou art that. This is supposed to be the formula of the supreme knowledge. three words, in which the supreme knowledge is contained. Later on, I shall tell you the Sanskrit words which you have to remember for your whole life. Tat Tvam Asi. Tat, T-A-T, Tat. Tat means that. Tat Tvam, Tvam means thou. Tat Tvam, T-V-A-M, Tat Tvam Asi. A-S-I, Tat Tvam Asi. Asi means art. Thou art that. The Upanishads are very famous for brevity, very brief, but packed. Thou art that. Realize thou art that. Not, don't become. Thou art that. He doesn't say thou should become that. Thou art that. Already you are that. You only realize it. At present you have forgotten it. You only realize, remember that you are that. So now we have before us a good map of all that exists, including ourselves and where we are in this vast transcendental existence, which we are really, which each of us is. Now our question was, where exactly is the hell? That was our inquiry. In all this, where is hell? Now you have read that passage which you showed me, where Sri Aurobindo speaks of it, where it is. And he says that it exists in the life plane. Even what you call paradise is also on that plane, what we call paradise. In many scriptures, you have descriptions of heaven and hell. They are normally the descriptions of what you find in the life plane. I don't know if in your research you have also opened the book Savitri. If you read Savitri, Sri Aurobindo has described all these things. One day you will read Savitri and then you will see the whole structure of the poem. It's a big epic in which the story is very simple. There is a kingdom of Madra. M-A-D-R-A, Madra, kingdom called Madra, of which there was a king called Ashwapati. He was concerned with the highest welfare of the world. He was aware of the problems of the world, the maladies of the world, difficulties of the world, and he was in search of solution to these problems. So, knowing at that time what yoga is, nowadays yoga is not so very well known and people have to make a very special study. But in those times, the yogic knowledge was much more easily available. So knowing what is yoga, he set upon the path of yoga. Now, if you read this book, in the very beginning you have, in the very first book, book one, where Sri Aurobindo first of all describes the beginning of the world. Well, book one is called the Book of Beginnings. It's a rapid survey of the whole beginning of the world. Very difficult to understand because The texture of this poem is very intricate. It's only the transcendental Purushottama himself can describe. And Sri Aurobindo, standing on the Purushottama consciousness, he describes the beginning of the world. And then rapidly Sri Aurobindo takes us up to the time when Savitri is born, gets married to Satyavan, and describes Savitri's condition because she knew that that was the day when her husband Satyavan was to die. All this Sri Aurobindo describes as it were in one. Some of you are painters, so you know how to make a sweep of colors. So like that, Sri Aurobindo describes the day on which Satyavan was to die. Then Sri Aurobindo takes us backward. There's a flashback. Who is this Savitri? What is this issue? Why had he to die? And what was the function? What was the role of Savitri? And who is Savitri? Then we are told Savitri is the daughter of Ashwapati. And Ashwapati was concerned with the whole world, was concerned with the problems of the world. And when he was concerned with the world, now comes the biography of Ashwapati, like a flashback. And he had come to a point where he says, I shall now do yoga, so that I can understand what are the problems and I can reach a point where I can resolve the problems, because there is a promise of yoga. As I told you last time, that by yogic powers, by yogic knowledge, we can gain the supreme knowledge of the being, of the divine. We can gain the supreme knowledge of the divine will and the supreme knowledge of the divine love. This is known actually in the yogic shastra. So knowing this, he began to do the yoga. And Canto 3 of the book 1 is called the Yoga of the King and Yoga of the Soul's Release, how he becomes liberated in his soul and attains a secret knowledge, and he establishes himself in the greatness of his being. But then, this is not enough. The entire book 2 is called the book of the traveler of the worlds. Of the worlds, not world. It is called the book of the traveler of the worlds. Now Ashwapati begins to scan the whole world, all these lanes. Now if you just read only the titles of each chapter, each canto, you will get the idea of all these things. I'll read out to you only the titles of each canto. The kingdom of subtle matter, which I discussed, subtle physical. The kingdom of subtle matter. Next is the glory and the fall of life plane. But of this plane, which is a very large plane, Sri Aurobindo devotes several cantos because a very huge thing to be described. The kingdoms of the little life, the godheads of the little life, kingdoms and godheads of the greater life, the descent into night, the world of falsehood, the mother of evil, and the sons of darkness. This is where hell is located. Then comes paradise of the life gods. In the same plane is also paradise. Then kingdoms and godheads of the little minds. Now you go above the life plane and come into the mind. The kingdoms and godheads of the little mind. Then the kingdoms and godheads of the greater mind. Heavens of the ideal. You begin to go above the mind. In the self of mind, self of mind is Purusha, the Manomaya Purusha, the mind mental Purusha. The world soul, the cosmic Purusha. And the kingdoms of the greater knowledge. You climb into higher mind, illumined mind, intuitive mind, over mind, super mind. Then in the third book, he moves forward and then sees the origin of the whole world, attains to the supramental and transcendental consciousness. It begins with the pursuit of the unknowable. This transcendental is unknowable. But this unknowable is approachable through him who has a creative power of which this world is a result. He is the Supreme Purusha from whom originates all things, originates through his own power. That power is called the Divine Mother. That Divine Mother is approached by Ashwapati. Then there is adoration of the Divine Mother, house of the Spirit and the new creation, the vision and the boon. He approaches the Supreme Divine Mother, puts forward all his problems and say the world is in a great difficulty, like what we can do now also. We can approach the Divine Mother in the same way and say there is a great difficulty in the world. He insists upon the Divine Mother, please do something. Then the Divine Mother answers, if such is your anxiety about the world, I feel moved and therefore I give the boon to you. I shall be born as your daughter. That's the Divine Mother's answer. I shall be born as your daughter and I shall take the mission of changing this world, of solving the problems of the world. And the rest of the whole poem is the birth of Savitri, her growth, achieving the adulthood, her marriage, Satyavan's death. That death is the crux of the problem of the world. That there is a phenomenon of death. If you can touch that problem, all other problems can be resolved. So, the knowledge with which she equips herself and utilizes that knowledge in conquering the death. And Satyavan comes back from death. That is the key of the solution of the problems. If you can touch the death and conquer the death, all the problems can be resolved. Now one day you'll read the whole book, Savitri, then you will understand and you will realize what knowledge is involved. When we read Sri Aurobindo, we are not reading a scripture in which you are to believe. Sri Aurobindo is a book of knowledge. He has described as we can describe this room, like that he has described all